The opinions expressed on all WRCA programs are those of the program producers and do not express the views of WRCA, its staff, or management.
A member of the Beasley Broadcast Group, this is 1330 WRCA, Watertown, Boston.
Tube Talk on WRCA Radio, 1330 AM, Boston. Yes, that's right. It's time for Tube Talk, broadcasting from Boston, Mass., hub of the universe, center of the world. Well, we hope you've all been very well last week. It is Friday night. It's time for Tube Talk. Welcome aboard. Maestro, music please. Was Artie Shar and his orchestra. This is Tube Talk. I am Paul Burish. Welcome back to another episode. And you know, part of the Tube Talk experience is some great vintage music from that well-defined era. When these songs were played over a high-class RCA, Philco, Zenith, True Tone, Silver Tone radio, you had known you arrived. And yes, you have. This is one of my favorite female vocalists, Kay Starr.
Ah, real live customer. Coming in the door. What can we sell you, miss?
Oh, I don't want to buy anything. I'm looking for a job.
Well, honey, we know just how you feel.
You call this the Dixieland Music Shop. I think you need a Dixieland singer.
She's got something there, Johnny. You and I have had complaints along those lines.
Well, my name's Kay Starr, and I'm from Memphis.
Well, I never met a star from Memphis who couldn't sing the Memphis blues.
Now, you go right ahead there, Kay, and the boys and I will follow you. Just make believe we never rehearsed it. Or have we?
Down, down to Memphis town. That's where people smile on you all the while. Hospitality, they were good to me. Couldn't spend a dime, had the grandest time. I went dancing with the Tennessee deer to a Mandy Mandy with the band you should hear. While those white folks wait, oh, the darkie played sweetest harmony. I never shall forget what Handy called a Memphis blues. I've got the blues, that melancholy strain, that ever haunting refrain. Like a black boy's sorrow song, here comes the fairy part that wraps a spell around my heart. Take me back to childhood days in Tennessee. I never shall.
Just off the Shore Road here at New Rochelle, New York. Mm-hmm. Memphis charming little K-star to sing Baby Me. Ladies and gentlemen, K-Star, and I just got to tell you, rather amazing couple of pieces there. Memphis Blues, followed up by Baby Me. Memphis Blues was from a 1939 recording. Miss K-Star was 16 years young, and I got to tell you, she could still put it out at just the young age of 16. And Baby Me, that was from 1944, so she was an old-timer by then. She was just a whopping 21 years old. So good stuff here on Tube Talk. If you'd like to reach the program, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. That's tubetalk1@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and maybe you could give me some feedback on this. This is an idea I'm going to let you guys in on, so listen closely, gang. I'm thinking of having a new feature when we have an interview on the program, and it's the Boston accent test that I will be administering to the guests. Now, it's going to work like this. Occasionally, I will get an email from a listener, and generally, they seem to be not in the Northeast. So I'll get these emails. I enjoy the program. Gee, I like your funny accent. Or, I enjoy the program. I like the music and the guests. Why do you sound so funny? And, you know, I don't know. I mean, do I sound funny to you? Certainly to a city full of Bostonians where this show emanates from. I don't think I sound funny at all. So here's the accent test, and I will be administering this to the guests. And if they pass the test, well, I don't know. You know, we might not bestow the ceremonial citizenship of Boston certificate when they leave the studio here. But here's how it goes. And imagine it this way. You could have a college professor of English who administers this test. So please repeat the following words, says the white-haired, friendly-looking professor to the person taking the Boston accent test. Say lager, as in beer. And the Bostonian taking the test goes, lager. Okay, here's another word for you. Please say culture, as in hoi polloi or upper crust. Culture. Please say aunt, or as in some parts of the country people would say aunt, like your Aunt Minnie. Aunt. Okay, let's try another word. How about garbage, as in take it out? Garbage. Okay. Well, you're not doing too well here, but a few phrases perhaps will do. And now try this phrase. Please repeat after me. Park the car down by the harbor. Park the car down by the harbor. Okay. Perhaps another phrase, and then we'll have to wind it up. Our interview time is running short. Put the bumper sticker on the car. Put the bumper sticker on the car. Well, as you can tell, the little old white-haired professor is tearing his hair out by the roots at this point in time. Paul, our happy Bostonian, who has gotten nothing more than a great big F on the R pronunciation test, is beaming, sitting on his stool, thinking he is an A student. Well, here comes the pronunciation dunce cap. And, well, Paul, we have some bad news for you. You're from Boston, and you'll never pass this test because you're from the land without the letter R. Well, we haven't done this in a while, and we're going to have a little fun tonight. We have a nifty old-time radio program. This is from a series of programs called Escape. And what better name for this episode than The Fugitive? It's an old piece of plastic, but it's a pretty good show. So cozy up to that warm, glowing wooden radio and sit back and relax. And for just once this week, we offer you Escape.
Fed up with the everyday grind, tired out from the summer heat. You want to get away from it all?
We offer you Escape. Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are trapped in the dark streets of an old French town with two remaining avenues of escape. The workshop of a fearsome knife maker, are the arms of a beautiful but deadly woman.
Tonight, we escape to the south of France and to the manhunt of a master criminal, as Vincent Starra told it in his unusual story, The Fugitive.
I had been 6 months in the prison of Tarentelle at the top of the hill above the little village of Saint-Just. As you know, of course, Saint-Just is in the very south of France, buried in those dark forests that lead up to the great crags of the Pyrenees. I was enjoying this enforced hospitality after having been convicted as a thief. And quite rightly so. For it is the fancy of some men to become bankers, of others soldiers. It had always suited my own fancy to be a thief. Ah, but no matter. Day after day went by, with nothing to do but to look out over the forests, watch the sunsets and the lights in the Chateau de Montaut, and 6 months began to seem like a lifetime. So, in my customary logical fashion, I decided to escape.
Monsieur Duplessis.
You were addressing me, Monsieur Lemieux?
Mon Dieu, who else? Do you think I expect to find you entertaining visitors behind this iron door?
Who knows what a detective may think? I have never found enough mentality in one to be able to analyze it.
You still have spirit, Duplessis. What a pity for it to be wasted in a prison cell.
Well, I confess I would much rather be outside there with you than inside here with me.
And I can almost wish that you were. Perhaps then I would not be so bored.
Oh, my deepest sympathy, Lemieux. Have the wine cellars at the chateau gone dry? Does the seigneur no longer serve those luscious meals you have told me so much about?
I have grown weary of it, my friend. I am a hunter of men by nature, not a bon vivant. Sometimes I wish you might contrive some means of escaping. I should enjoy the sport of tracking you down again.
In that case, monsieur, the key.
Though I dare say it would be rather easy the second time. I know just how your mind turns all your little fancies.
Well, the key, monsieur.
Then, too, I'm a master of disguises. Should you pause by a stream, the fisherman who handed you a drink would suddenly turn out to be Lemieux.
You astonish me.
You would perhaps register at an inn. Then the clerk would smile at you, and you would see...
Permit me, Lemieux.
Ah, well. Why dream of the impossible, Duplessis? You have another 4.5 years to serve in Tarentelle, and I am dining at the Chateau de Montau in an hour. So...
Lemieux, why not imagine I am contriving some way to escape? That should give you an appetite.
Ah, Duplessis, your waiter has deserted you. You speak of absurdities now.
Perhaps you are right. Au revoir, monsieur. Ah, but he was cunning, this Lemieux. Sleek and pretty like a weasel. But have you ever seen the teeth of a weasel slash the throat of a bird? I have. And I have seen Lemieux do somewhat similar things. Ah, oh, well, no matter. Half an hour after he had gone, when dusk was falling, I lifted 2 iron bars from the window of my cell, slid through, and climbed down the wall. Oh, but it was not so simple as it sounds, you know. I had been working on it for nearly 2 months, secretly and quietly. And now, I was free. I slunk furtively and fearfully through the underbrush, making my way rapidly toward the village of Saint-Just at the foot of the hill. Behind me, at any moment, a great gun would boom from the walls of Tarentelle, informing the world that one of the prisoners had made an escape. Ahead of me, faint flares of lightning warned of a storm to come, while my heart beat a pace with my footsteps. I thought to myself, how terrible indeed is this business of freedom. How much simpler it is to be in prison. Well, as you may have perceived already, I am something of a philosopher. Well, no matter. It was then that I suddenly saw a light gleaming ahead of me, and I began to hear a strange sound. I could make out the shape of a small open hut a few paces ahead of me. The light was thrown out by the glowing coals in a forge, and the sound was made by an old man beating out a piece of metal on an anvil. He was small, wrinkled, and bald except for 2 white tufts of hair that grew in front of his ears. As I drew near, quietly, I could see that he was making a knife, and that other knives hung on the walls of the hut. And I had no weapon. And I began to wonder if, by some means, I might steal one from him.
Come in, my son.
Huh?
It may start raining in a moment.
Well, merci, monsieur. I'm a stranger hereabouts. I lost my way in the wood.
No need. I understand.
You are a maker of knives?
Oui, monsieur. You would like to have one, perhaps.
Well, old man, the fact of the matter is that being a law-abiding citizen, I really have little need of a knife. However, both they are pretty, and the forest is very dark. But I am at the moment without funds, so...
There is no charge, my son. Here, look at this one.
Ah, oh, it is a beautiful knife.
Try the edge. It is quite sharp.
Mon Dieu, you are right. This weapon would suit a king himself or a prince of thieves.
Yeah, you are a philosopher, my son.
Or a thief. But what? There are words engraved on the blade. On one side, reason, and on the other, irony. Reason and irony. You're something of a philosopher yourself, old maker of knives.
I use different verbs and different blades, but the quality is always the same.
It fits well in my hand.
Then take it. It is yours.
With such a blade, a man could fight his way through hell itself. I should like to see the look on the face of Monsieur... Wait. You are not by any chance Le Mieux.
The great gun in the wall of Tarantelle. Some prisoner has escaped. No, my son. I am not Le Mieux. Why do you ask?
I thought for a moment, but no. No, of course not. Well, I must be off, old knife maker. I have a long way to go, and it is starting to rain. My deepest gratitude for your generosity.
Oh, we shall meet again, my son. Tell me then, after you have tried the blade.
Of course. Adieu, monsieur.
Au revoir, Duplessis.
I was not afraid anymore. The rain smashed and splattered in the trees, and the dark shadows became old friends. I ran through the night, laughing and sometimes singing, slashing with my knife at the leaves on the branches. Reason and irony, slash. I forgot the prison behind me, forgot everything except my goal. A tiny cottage standing at the very outskirts of Saint-Just. Marie Simard would be waiting there where I had left her. Soft, warm, beautiful Marie, of whom I had dreamed every night in that cursed cell. We would go into the village together, then to the inn of Paul Despard, and with the bag of jewels I had left with him, escape to the Spanish frontier. To freedom! Marie! Marie!
Who is it?
It is I, ma petite Duplessis.
Sacrement de bonté.
Open the door quickly, please.
But you... How have
Inside
you...
first. That is better. The shutters? All closed. Good. Come now, tell me how glad you are to see me.
Oh, I am glad, but surprised. How are you here? They have not released you?
Not intentionally, my dear. I reviewed my own case and decided, Duplessis, you are really a very fine fellow and by no means belong here. So, I released myself.
You have escaped then?
Not completely, or at any rate, not yet. What? Oh, what a lovely scent you are wearing, Marie de Monham. And that dress, a new one, is it not?
Oui, mon coeur. It was given to me by the old woman who lives in the next cottage down the way.
Well, I must leave a small diamond for her after we have seen Paul.
Paul Despard, you are going to see him?
But of course, ma jolie, we shall need money to live in Spain.
I see. Duplessis, mon coeur, you are very wet. You must be tired. Rest here in this chair while I run down to the old woman's and bring wine and little cakes.
No, Marie, there is not time.
It will only take a moment. We can go to Paul's afterwards. Surely you know you are safe here with me.
Safe while Le Mieux is out there someplace.
Le Mieux?
The others, the soldiers and the guards, they are fools, but not Le Mieux. He is cunning. I am beginning to fancy that I see him behind every face I meet.
But surely you do not think...
Oh, ma chérie, of one thing I am certain, that you are not Le Mieux. Oh, come, I must touch you. It has been such a long time.
You're so wet. Perhaps I should go borrow a dry coat for you.
No. The rain has stopped. I shall be dry by the time we reach... The little ring I gave you, the one with the heart, you are not wearing it.
I put it away. I did not wish to wear it until you were with me again.
Which I am from this moment on, ma petite. So...
No, Duplessis, this is no time to waste. We must leave now and hurry. We'll go to Paul Despard's this moment, now.
But a few paces brought us into the streets of the village of Saint-Just. We moved quickly and I kept the collar of my coat turned high on my face. Soon we were making our way among the handful of patrons who still lingered at the tables of the inn, talking in the light of candles held in empty bottles. I kept my hand on the knife beneath my coat, but no one glanced up as we crossed to the far side of the room.
There he is, at the little table in front of the office.
Oui, ma jolie, so he is, and not changed a bit.
Paul?
Marie, what a surprise. I had no idea that you might... Duplessis.
Bonne nuit, mon ami.
Duplessis, what in the
there
name...
There is no time, Paul. Take him in the office.
But of course.
I have things which must be done. I shall be back very shortly, Paul.
Oui, I understand. Come, Duplessis.
Hurry, Marie.
I shall hurry, mon coeur, never fear.
There it is, locked. Well, mon ami, this is quite a surprise. I take it you are on an unofficial leave of absence.
Completely so, Paul. I have a pass which is good only so long as Lemieux does not catch up with me.
Lemieux? Oh, he is a clever one, all right.
Indeed he is. Almost as clever as Duplessis.
But no matter.
You have kept the little bag of jewels safe for me?
Quite safe.
Très bien. They will serve me well in Spain. I hope to be across the frontier in an hour.
So soon? But we have so many things to talk about.
Oh, there's little chance for talk, Paul, when a man is running for his life. The jewels are here, close at hand?
Nearby.
Well, get them now, Paul.
Well, the fact of the matter is, they are at my house on the other side of town.
Oh, feast.
It will take only a moment, and I can send someone to...
Wait. Voices outside the door.
Well, I hear nothing at all. You are only imagining.
Paul,
that...
you signaled someone before we came in here.
No, mon ami. No, you're mistaken.
I saw you not to a man out there at one of the tables.
No, you must believe me. I did not.
Stay away from the door. I called you, my friend.
The crowd will break down that door in a moment. You had better give up. You are a fool, Duplessis. And an hour from now, you will be back in Tarentelle, where you belong.
I doubt it this far. They have not yet found the back door, but either way, you will not know about it.
Knife. On the Duplessis. Oh. No, no.
Away from that door.
No, you cannot. Murderous beast. I will stop you.
Oh, dear. A gold piece is thrown at my head. Now, where is the sport in killing a man whose only weapon is a bag of money? Oh, I am a philosopher.
Bonne nuit, monsieur le gold piece.
I ran down the dark streets from the back of the inn, turned corners, dodged away from the shadows. Far off, like the sound of hunting dogs, I could hear the voice of the mob. I knew not where to find Marie, nor of any man now who might be trusted. I ran blindly. One direction was as good as another, and the things of reality became clouded with those of imagination, so I could no longer tell them apart. Such is the great fear of the hunted, which knows only to run from one unknown to another unknown, but always to run and run and run.
This is Tube Talk, and it's Escape on WRCA Radio 1330 AM.
Slowly, but they paid no attention, and I knew they were not part of the mob which followed. Then I saw that all of them were going through the door into the great building. The cathedral. Voila, what a place to hide for a moment. I joined them and was carried along in the crowd. I found myself near the front with people all around me. I kept my head down and crouched there, trying to stop trembling.
You are out of breath, my friend. You seem frightened.
Silence. Do you wish to disturb the service?
Oh, never fear. It will continue regardless. Duplessis.
One moment, monsieur, and I shall cut your throat. Oh,
come now, put away the knife. I am your friend. I have always admired you.
Who are you?
Merle. I keep a little shop in the village. Perfumes, spices, flavorings, all things calculated to make life more agreeable.
You are Lemieux in disguise.
Oh, ridiculous, monsieur. Lemieux is at the Chateau de Monteau. I passed him on his way there. He thinks the mob will do his work for him. Put away the knife. You have nothing to fear from me.
That may be, but I feel much better while I hold it in my hand.
Cautious Duplessis? Hardly like the great adventurer I always admired.
Adventurer, eh?
Oh, the very prince of thieves, the king of poets and teacher of philosophers.
Well, I am quite a fellow, all right.
Indeed you are. A man who should be standing up, not hiding his face. Swaggering and laughing.
Merle, mon ami, you are really a fellow of discernment. Indeed you are.
Monsieur, is that a knife you're holding in your hand?
Ah, oui, mon père. But...
knives are not permitted in here.
But it is a very good knife. It has words written on the blade.
No matter. Knives are not permitted, monsieur.
Look, it is Duplessis.
They have seen you now, my friend. You must run. But never fear. We shall meet again, I think, very soon.
I escaped from them again and found myself finally on the outskirts of the far side of town. I knew not where to go next. I looked up and my eyes fell upon the lighted windows of the Chateau de Monteau, standing alone above the countryside at the very top of a point of rock. A sudden thought occurred to me, brazen and audacious. What better sanctuary than the very chateau where Lemieux himself waited for word of my capture? I smiled to myself in the darkness and then began to climb swiftly up the face of the rock. I stood at last on a tiny parapet close against the massive stone walls of the chateau, high above the countryside. Behind me were lighted windows and the sound of voices, but out there on the parapet, there was only the night and the stillness, stars, and a ghostly moon riding like a silver galleon in the black billows of the sky. Its pale light fell on the tumbled forest below me, on the tiny little village of Saint-Just, and touched faintly in the distance the far-off crags of the Pyrenees beyond the Spanish frontier. I do not know how long I stood there, looking down upon the world. Perhaps I was a little mad by then, of that I'm not quite sure. Suddenly, I saw someone coming toward me on the parapet. They had not yet seen me. Bonne nuit, mademoiselle.
What? Who is it?
It is I, Marie Duplessis.
What are you doing here?
A very good question. As a matter of fact, I think I shall use it myself. What are you doing here?
I came here to find Lemieux after I lost you, of course.
And you found him, I trust?
Oh, oui, mon coeur is inside in the banquet hall with the others. I thought that if he should find you, then I would be there to help.
How thoughtful of you, ma jolie. But to help whom?
But you, of course. Oh, how can you doubt me?
Oh, very easily. This night, in fact, I believe I could doubt the universe itself.
Oh, mon chéri, you only say such things when you are fancying yourself a philosopher.
Or a fool, which is much the same thing. But here, look at you. Another new dress. The old woman is very good to you, Marie.
I am quite grateful to her.
And did she also give you the ring, my dear?
The ring?
Oui, the ring you are wearing. The ring which I saw so many times on her hand that would grasp the bars of my cell, the hand of Lemieux.
No, Duplessis, I swear to you it is nothing. I found it.
Found it? Perhaps in the same place where you lost mine.
No, put away the knife. It is all a mistake.
It was you who brought them up to the inn, and Paul knew you had gone to do it.
No, it was someone else. Please, do not kill me. Let me go.
Go where? Back inside to warn Lemieux that I am here?
No. I shall go down the path here, see? Oh, you cannot kill me. You loved me once, do you not remember? Please, let me go.
Go then. Go quickly before I change my mind.
I am going. I will not harm you.
To detest a woman thoroughly, it is necessary first to have loved her. Huh? Well, I really am quite a fellow after all. A true philosopher.
Indeed you are, mon ami.
Huh?
It is one of the things for which I have always admired you.
Oh, it is you, Monsieur Merle, the seller of perfumes.
Oh, must you always carry that vicious knife in your hand?
It is a good knife. An old man gave it to me. And there are words on the blade. See, on one side, reason. On the other, irony.
Well, we shall have little need for either once we are across the frontier in Spain.
Tell me, Monsieur, why do you wish to help me?
Because I like you. Because you are Duplessis, whom I admire as something great. As great as that moon that shines over us. What is it?
Something glinted on your hand when you held it up there. Let me see it.
Oh, it was nothing. It was only a trick of the moonlight.
Let me see your hand.
But I tell you that...
You too. The little ring with a heart that I gave to her a long time ago.
Oh, it is nothing, my friend. I found her.
As she found Lemieux's. They have gone too long without knowing for certain if this is really a good knife.
Oh, you cannot mean that. No, I'm your friend, Duplessis. I'm going to take you to...
Take me where, monsieur? Now we shall see whether you can fly without wings. There.
down and down and down. By heaven, it is like a scene from a play. This parapet, a stage, the moon for a spotlight, and a body pirouetting through space.
True enough, my son. But you should not have killed him.
Huh?
The weapon was made for stronger opponents.
Well, old maker of knives, you said we should probably meet again.
He is gone, out of sight. And there are only the stars, and the night, and the moon. What now, Duplessis?
I do not know. Spain, perhaps?
Lemieux would follow, and there would be another Marie, another Paul, and another Mère, waiting in Spain to tell him where you were.
Have I escaped from prison to find this? Is everything false? Is there no man left in the world who is true?
I am only a knife maker.
Well, it is a good knife. It worked very well.
You have not yet tried it against Lemieux?
No. You are right. He is inside there, in the banquet hall.
It will not be an easy thing, my son. But I know not how to warn you. You must find it out for yourself.
Warning? When has Duplessis ever had need of warning? Merci, Monsieur le Knife Maker, for your excellent intentions. And I shall find out for myself. Now. The stone corridors of the chateau were empty. Though as I drew nearer, I could hear the sound of voices in the great banquet hall. I made my way quietly to a low balcony overlooking the room, and soon was peering through the drawn curtains that screened off the table below. Lemieux was there, and Paul, and the seigneur of the chateau. Marie had come back somehow, and there were others too. Lemieux was talking.
Duplessis will be captured sooner or later, that I can assure you. I know the fellow. Know how his mind works. That's why I do not even bother to chase him. He will trap himself.
Most certainly you are right, Monsieur Lemieux. And the sooner the better. More wine, ma chérie.
Merci, cher Paul.
I dare say you will rest a bit easier, Monsieur le Seigneur, once the fellow is taken.
Why do you say that?
Look at those paintings on the walls, ma petite. There on the balcony behind the curtain is a Rembrandt worth at least €1,000,000. Quite a temptation for the very Prince of Thieves, if he did not have something more important on his mind. You know,
I thought for one moment they were going to draw back the curtains to reveal me standing there above them. But then they talked of other things and the danger passed. I looked down upon them, crouched like weasels around the table, tearing at their food with sharp little teeth. Half mad from the fear of being hunted, I began to fancy that they were all animals, and their wine was the blood of birds. While I stood there watching, Merle came in quietly and sat down with him. Merle, whom I had killed and thrown from the parapet. I realized then what the old maker of knives had tried to tell me. I had not killed Merle, but only thought I had done so. For how can a man kill his own vanity? And Paul would always be here, of course, ready to buy and sell with his bags of gold. And Marie, too, luring me with a voice filled with a warm softness of pleasure. And Lemieux, incarnation of fate, the hunter of men, what of Lemieux? As I stared through the curtains, I knew suddenly that I could never kill Lemieux, that he would take me sooner or later. For in my half-crazed mind, every face now looked the same. And everyone was the face of Lemieux. I turned to look at the tall painting, the Rembrandt, that hung on the wall behind me. It was the portrait of a cavalier, proud and haughty, frozen in a pose of nobility, with one hand resting on his sword. Should I, an even better man, a prince of thieves and of philosophers, permit myself to be run to earth at last by a pack of dogs? Would it not be far better to give myself up at my own choice, show them at the same time their littleness, and rob them of their victory? Voilà, I had decided. With the point of my knife, I cut the painting from its frame and threw it to one side. I looked at my blade, so useless now. On one side, reason. On the other, irony. And then drove it into the wood at the top of the frame. It quivered there a moment,
and then was still. Carefully, I lighted the two tall candles on either side, then stepped up and stood in the frame with my back against the wall. I smiled a moment to myself, and then reached out my hand and took hold of the cord to draw aside the curtains.
Escape is produced and directed by Norman McDonald. Tonight we have brought you The Fugitive by Vincent Starrett, adapted for radio by Les Crutchfield, with editorial supervision by John Dunkel. Featured in tonight's cast was Louis Van Ruten, with Ben Wright, Gloria Blondell, Barry Kroger, Wilms Herbert, and John Daner. Special music by Ivan Dittmars.
And that's Escape, The Fugitive from 1948. Not only a fugitive, but I'd say a little bit of a madman. Well, we hope you found our old-time radio show interesting. I love those French accents. Very authentic. I don't think I've heard ones that good since Hogan's Heroes. Anyway, one of my favorite female vocalists is Patsy Cline. And this is a somewhat rare piece of music. This was cut shortly before Patsy left us all too soon.
I know that someday you'll want me to want you. When I'm in love with somebody new, you expect me to be true and keep on loving you, though I am feeling blue. You think I can't forget you until someday you'll want me to want you. When I am strong for somebody else, and although you don't want me now, I'll get along somehow, and then I won't.
Miss Patsy Cline. Well, gang, thanks for listening. If you'd like to email the show, it's tubetalk1@gmail.com. We'd like to hear from you. We'll be wrapping up with a little more music here and hope you enjoyed our show. Hope you enjoyed the tunes and the old-time radio drama. We'll see you soon. Hopefully, you'll tune in again next week, 10 p.m. Eastern, 1330 a.m., it's Tube Talk on WRCA. That's Woody Herman. I'm Paul Burish, wishing you a good night from Tube Talk here on WRCA. Good night!